So, hey, we're talking about Footloose, and it's based on a true story.
What?
And not, in the old times. This basically happened in Elmore City, Oklahoma, in 1980. So, simultaneously in this country, Studio 54 was happening, and a town that banned dancing was still there because the preacher said, quote, "No good has ever come from a dance." That's this country, America, fairly recently. Like, Camila was alive at the time. It is a miracle we've survived this long. Anyway, Footloose was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Yeah.
Oh my
The number
God.
one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier. Sorry to get on a tangent there.
It was first thing.
When I found that this movie was a true story, it was like, full stop. This is all I can think about.
That is news to me.
Well,
and wow.
I thought that I had heard that somewhere like some years ago, and I'm pretty sure that I brought that up like in a party situation, like drinks were involved or something like that, and I was like trying to be like, yes, it was a true story, and nobody believed me, and I didn't have the receipts to say anything or the confidence in myself to back myself up, so I just let it drop and forgot about it until this moment.
Vindication.
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 It's a town of Elmore City, Oklahoma, fewer than 1,000 people. They had a public dancing ban. It was this story, but not motivated, not because the preacher's son had died in a drunken nightclub
related accident.
Yeah, it was just they didn't think they thought no good could come of it. The students applied to have a prom and went before the school board and the county council, and it was narrowly approved. So it was also less dramatic than this story, but still, until 1980.
That's wow. And it's still like even the reasonings behind the ban, and like they had none really in real life, and so, but even the ones here is just kind of like, it's really not. Still not a good reason. Like you're still not, because now you're forcing these kids to go play chicken with tractors.
Right. Like,
and the incident wasn't like it was some drunk, like somebody shot up a dance hall. It was they got drunk at a dance hall and they were decided to play chicken. So no one's talking about fucking, I don't know, motor vehicle safety or.
No, it truly it. They make it sound like he had a. Literally dance related accident.
Right. Like was he dancing when he was driving? Like was is that
yeah.
what the problem was? Cause I could see that cause.
Because I've risked life and limb that way from time to time. You get too into it.
Sometimes. I mean sometimes you gotta take that cabbage patch to the full tilt.
Yes. When I was in high school, my friend Christy was driving us around and she got pulled over and the small town cop was like, I pulled you over because I saw a lot of bopping happening in the car.
Excessive bopping. What's the bopping fine?
Is right. that
a warning? Is that points on your license for bopping?
We got away with a warning.
I saw a lot
I
of
thought
bopping.
Maybe we were drunk and then saw we were a bunch of 16-year-old girls.
It's like, 16-year-old girl's gonna bop, man, no matter drunk
yeah.
or not. Like, that's just... It's just how I
that
roll.
That or play tractor chicken.
Well, very briefly, ordinarily I give a lot of stats about the previous week's episode. It's number one. Fight Club is our number one movie.
Woo!
There. It's done. 92 and a third. And that took it easily, because Alien was an 89 and a half.
Oh, wow.
By more than two full points. Gonna be hard to catch that. It's going to take, like, I don't know. What I mean, does everyone love Jurassic Park as much as I do? Like, what would it take?
I doubt if it'd be Jurassic Park. Like, yeah. I mean, unless you were to rate it 100 And I don't believe that I would rate Jurassic Park less than 80. So kind of stands on Robin.
Probably in the 90 area for Jurassic Park as well.
Would I go to 100? I don't know. It's the same question as Wizard of Oz. I would have to watch it consciously. Yeah. I don't know. It's not going to be Footloose. I'll tell you that.
Spoiler!
Before we get into it, not what I was expecting, but after about half an hour, I was sitting there going, is this a bad movie?
Same.
Really?
Not good.
I was thinking the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
And this might be only my second time watching it.
I will be here to defend Footloose.
All right.
As Robin climbs up on the hill that she will die on today.
I have a feeling this is going to be similar to the Pretty in Pink episode, where it's like, well, childhood Robin can't totally be wrong.
Right.
Robin crosses fire down below off of her soapbox and writes Footloose in it.
This is a much more worthy subject of my defense.
Well, my editorializing will start with the 60-second recap, which is basically unprepared. So somebody tell me when to go.
Go.
Kevin Bacon plays Ren from Chicago, who moves to a small town. He likes dancing. Chris Penn tells him that in this town, they're not allowed to dance. Kevin Bacon says, we should be able to dance. The town board says no. They have a dance outside of town anyway. The end.
Now, you did it. That was less than 60 seconds.
Yes.
Admittedly, I'm leaving a lot out there.
There's some other junk that happens.
Tell me if anything else actually matters.
No, I mean, you maybe glossed over like the 8 different full song montages that happened throughout the film. But
yes, I feel like you could give a little bit more attention to Laurie Singer's character. And
she's an asshole.
Listen, she is a bad person who I want to be when I grow up. She is my Tyler Durden. She is so sexy and so cool. And why would Kevin Bacon kiss her? She's been kissed a lot, but he doesn't. Anyway.
I do like the response of when she asked, do you want to kiss me? And he's like, someday. I'm like, that's boss. I like that.
That's exactly the right word to describe it, boss. Also, I was going to put on my red cowboy boots for this recording, but I forgot to do it.
I love that you have red cowboy boots.
I love that the movie Footloose opens on feet for a while. being loose. That's nice.
way to take it real literally, guys.
So I watched this with Colin last night, and he had never seen it before. And during the opening sequence where they show all the feet that are not loose, that become loose, he was like, damn it, this is really cool. And I was like, yeah. He's like, this is already making me think about how I like dancing, right? It's already making me feel like I'm having a good time. And I completely agree. And the other thing is that Colin just kind of maintained that attitude throughout the film. Like, I want to make fun of this, but I'm enjoying it.
Bless his heart.
Which possibly boosted my opinion of it watching it last night, because I hadn't seen it since at high school at the latest, and probably more like middle school. So it's been over 20 years since I've seen it. And I thought that as a grown up, I would maybe find it a lot more cheesy and hokey. But no, I was totally on for the ride. And maybe it's because I was living vicariously through Colin being swept into the joy of dance.
Maybe. I was just spent a lot of time thinking, like, how is this what launched Kevin Bacon's career?
Because he's cute.
And again, that's another thing. Like, when he shows up on screen and they're like, he's a fox. I'm like, what do the rest of the dudes in this town look like? Like, why?
Chris Penn.
You saw their busted faces.
I mean, even the dude that she was kicking it with, like, he was, I would have gone with him, like, before Bacon. It was just.
He looked a little bit like Scott Eastwood.
Yes.
To the extent that I can remember what Scott Eastwood's face looks like, which is minimal. But no, Kevin Bacon to me is very attractive in this movie because of his confidence. And one thing that is so bad and great about this movie is that, like, the dancing is not good.
Oh my God. That hurt my feelings all the way through.
Kevin Bacon's dancing is like just wild limb movements.
Dance like a white boy should, as some of my relatives used to say.
That's exactly right. Right. And then also, like, I thought about Break-In because they make him a gymnast.
Right, right.
Because it's like, we can't find a white person who can dance, but we can get a stunt double to go on the parallel bars.
Oh, well, I'm sure it's probably not in the fact, I'm sure it's in the faxy segment, but I read that it took four fucking doubles to take on the dance.
Not in the faxy segment, but yes, in the big, where does he work? Some form of mill?
He works at a flour mill.
Okay.
At a flour mill, in the flour mill sequence. That was Kevin Bacon, Kevin Bacon's two dance doubles, and Kevin Bacon's gymnastics double. That is four men working together to not dance that well.
Right.
You got four people, and this is what you got out of it.
Right.
When they finally get to the end and they have those two white boys do actual breakdancing,
right.
I was like, where have you been this whole movie?
Right. It's like, you've just been hiding.
I was mostly checked out by them, but I looked up and I was like, okay, so dancing has been against the law here. All of these people are ready for stomp. Like,
they couldn't monitor them in their own homes back then. And you saw like how the breakdown at the fucking malt shop or whatever, wherever they were, as soon as she puts on Dancing in the Sheets, everybody loses their fucking shit. It's like, my God, the fact that this is based on, or there, this happened in real life. And I'm just like, the entire movie, I'm just like, but how, Sway, how can you ban dancing?
When does bopping transition into dancing? Right. Is there a misdemeanor charge for like just kind of seat dancing? If you're seat dancing, is that
right?
He got charged $25 for having that pop music cassette.
That's true.
$25 in 1984 dollars. That's like $50 now.
Rough.
Well, let's get through these facts and then continue ruining Robin's time. Footloose was released February 17th of 1984, the fourth number one movie of that year, won its opening weekend with $8.5 million, and the next two weekends without much competition. Big year in cinema, but not yet in February. Fell to second in its fourth weekend behind the debuting Splash, and hung around for a long time. Other than a few quick little dips out of the top 10, it stuck around through mid-June. Total gross was just over $80 million. Speaking of inflation, when we go this far back, it's worth noting the inflated total. That would be about $207 million in box office today. Mm-hmm. Seventh highest grossing film of 1984. And no shame in losing to this lineup. It got beat by, in order, Beverly Hills Cop, Ghostbusters, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Gremlins, The Karate Kid, and surprisingly, Woo! Our old friend Police Academy was sixth for the year.
It got beat out by The Karate Kid?
Yeah, Karate Kid was fifth.
Okay.
It's odd how much I thought, oh, this is like The Karate Kid, but not done well. Yeah, like, you know, moves to a small town, but like, we're not going to justify anything. We're not going to round out the characters. It's just tractor fights and dancing. Sorry, already editorializing too much. The soundtrack was a gigantic hit. Soundtrack went to number one.
Well, they played the entire thing.
What's that?
They played the entire thing of the movie.
Several songs more than once. Right. Did I heard the title track three times.
You are correct, sir.
A level of saturation that helped that song, Footloose, go to number one. Let's Hear It for the Boy also went for number one. To number one, rather. Almost Paradise went to number seven. Holding Out for a Hero peaked at number 34, which is a crime. That should be a number one.
Which, I didn't know that song was from this movie.
Well, I'm going to put a pen and have a question for you, Sean, after you're done with this about that.
The album 9 times platinum in the United States. Expensive Baubles, Footloose received 2 Oscar nominations. Robin?
So original song, I think it got 2. Not, I think it was both Let's Hear It for the Boy and the title track. I don't think it won.
That is all of that is correct. The two nominations were both in Best Original Song.
Was
for
it,
those two.
Was that the Say You, Say Me year?
This
I just
is,
called Say I Love You?
It's I Just Called to Say I Love
okay.
You. This, I think we've talked about this before, because what a clear case of the worst song winning.
Yes.
And I don't love Let's Hear It for the Boy. Let's Hear It for the Boy is okay. But the nominees were I Just Called to Say I Love You, Footloose, Let's Hear It for the Boy, Ghostbusters, and Phil Collins Against All Odds.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you right now, if I'm in a any sort of situation, if Footloose comes on, I'm dancing. Like, that's basically it. That's just, it's
everybody
my jam.
Cut.
Right,
cut.
Exactly. That's the breakdown. That was like, I miss my clubbing days when we would go on 80s nights, my girl Nina and I, Footloose come on. That's it. That's our jam.
Yes.
And a consolation prize, the only one of those five songs that is on AFI's 100 Years, 100 Songs list. That was fun, where every 2 years AFI would roll out a new completely arbitrary list of things. The only one of those five songs that is on the AFI list is Footloose at number 96. Just snuck in there.
Wow.
Can you name the number one film song of all time?
As Time Goes By.
That's number two.
What's the Barbra Streisand, The Wings, Wind Beneath My Wings?
A good guess, but it is not high. If that's on there, it's not high. Wind Beneath My Wings is 44.
Oh, wow. Wait, you said this is movie scores, right?
Is it Moon River?
Ugh.
Moon River is 5.
Okay.
I Will Always Love You.
Moon River.
I Will Always Love You is not coming up in the top 50.
What?
I will Always Love You is 65. What are you doing?
I quit. I don't understand this list, and I refuse to participate in this nonsense.
This is just a not thinking of the obvious answer. Number one is Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Oh,
okay. Followed by As Time Goes By, Singing in the Rain. Oh, I'm sorry. Moon River is 4. Moon River is 4.
I do not understand the appeal of Moon River to anyone.
Never. Never.
I like Moon River.
Okay.
You would.
White Christmas, Mrs. Robinson, When You Wish Upon a Star, The Way We Were, Staying Alive, and The Sound of Music.
Is The Way We Were the Barbra Streisand thing you were thinking of?
Me? No, I just mixed up my ladies. Because I was literally thinking of Wind Beneath My Wings and song, but Streisand and Midler, I kind of sometimes mix them up.
I think that is an incredible compliment to Bette Midler. also think she probably deserves it.
It's a weird list because you're combining three things. You're combining actual songs from movies like Over the Rainbow and As Time Goes By with songs from musicals.
I don't think that's like, fair.
I agree.
Like The Sound of Music and Somewhere from West Side Story is on here. And then pop songs like Mrs. Robinson from The Graduate is 6. But that was already a song
that they chose to.
I thought they wrote that for the film. But I Will Always Love You wasn't written for the film. Dolly Parton wrote that
right.
15 years beforehand.
Yeah, I feel like the songs and the musicals. I stand by this so much that actually I had started a Spotify playlist of songs from movies that I enjoy, and then I got conflicted when it started to be like, well, is this a musical and this is a score, like, and this is like a song from, so I have three separate playlists on Spotify.
And movies can end up owning a song that existed before. Like, I will never not think of Fight Club when I hear Where Is My Mind, for example.
Right. And also, you know, like you said, I Will Always Love You. That's now connected to The Bodyguard.
Right.
Yes.
A few other notes here. A musical based on Footloose opened in 1998. Much of the soundtrack songs are in there as musical numbers and new songs that like go over the plot. It's bad. It is a bad show. It ran for about a year and a half to a mixed reception. Speaking of mixed receptions, Footloose did not get good reviews. Here's Ebert this week. A seriously confused movie that tries to do three things and does all of them badly, said Roger Ebert. The three things were like, be a small town story, be a teen fun movie, and be a music video. And he thought he didn't like any of that.
I think it nailed all three.
Footloose got a remake in 2011. That is not a number one movie in America. Debuted in second behind Real Steel, the Hugh Jackman robot fighting movie. This one got slightly better reviews, actually. It's barely fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Don't worry, Ebert still hated it. Ebert called the new one a film without wit, humor, or purpose. Not a particularly big hit, made $51.8 million in 2011. Everyone in the world was up to play Ariel. The initial choices for Ren were Tom Cruise, as a direct result of him dancing in Risky Business, he was considered, and Rob Lowe. Both of them turned it down. Kevin Bacon had already signed on to play, or at least been offered the lead in Christine, the Stephen King thing. But left that film just to audition for Footloose because he thought that would be the bigger move for his career. He was right.
He was right. I don't know how or why.
Among, literally, there's a list of 30 people that were considered for Ariel that appears everywhere. It can't be all of them, seriously. Madonna auditioned and was not selected. Daryl Hannah was offered the part and turned it down to do Splash.
That's who I was confusing Laurie Singer with her for a hot second. I was like, that's not Daryl Hannah, but by God, it might as well, be. Yeah.
It's off-brand Daryl Hannah.
Yeah, economy.
Yeah.
Economical Daryl Hannah.
And finally, this was also not the original choice to direct. Herbert Ross is the director. He did Goodbye Girl, Funny Lady, aww, Pennies from Heaven.
And The Turning Point, notorious, yes, Oscar strikeout, The Turning Point, also same year as Goodbye Girl. He's one of those directors who had two Best Picture nominees in the same year.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how many of those have happened. I know Francis Ford Coppola did it and Steven Soderbergh did it. But Turning Point got 11 nominations. It's a dancing movie. Mikhail Baryshnikov got a Best Supporting Actor nomination, which we've talked before. Zero wins. Mm. But yeah, he was a dancer and a choreographer.
So he makes natural sense for this movie. You know who doesn't? The original director, Michael Cimino, best known for The Deer Hunter.
Maybe then we would have gotten this plot that, you know, Dan was talking about of, you know, Ariel is actually a serial killer and nobody asked like where she was the night of the accident that happened.
Right. Like, she doesn't appear to have much of a moral compass.
No, she doesn't.
Or like any amount of like being considerate. Like when she first does her wild car swap stunt.
Right.
I just couldn't stop thinking about poor Sarah Jessica Parker and the other girls in the car. Right.
Exactly.
Like begging her to not kill herself through wild car stunts.
Oy vey.
And she pulls the same thing on Kevin Bacon later with the train. It's like, is this your kink? Like, is this how?
And what
by the way, nothing in this or any movie is more unbelievable than the little house where all of the bad kids go to write poetry on the walls. This is not how people in repressed small towns. They're not sneaking Walt Whitman in the back door. They just don't care.
Right. None of them have found this out. This isn't their, you know, gateway drug to other things that are loose and whatnot. They're just, you know what? I really found out because there's no internet. So there was even no way to accidentally find out about Walt Whitman. That's a purposeful move. And yeah, I don't buy it.
Camila, ask the question you put a pin in before we let Robin make us feel bad about our cynicism.
Okay, this is about Bonnie Tyler. So, and the song, what was it? The Hero song?
Holding
Out for a Hero. So when we did Hero, and then you had your hint on Twitter of a GIF, and it was Bonnie Tyler, Total Eclipse of the Heart. Did you get those confused, or was that on purpose?
Good question.
Because I saw it, and I was like, I don't think this is what he thinks this is.
No, the GIF was from Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Right.
But I very pointedly picked one that did not say Total Eclipse of the Heart. It was just a picture of Bonnie Tyler.
Okay.
Hoping that people would go, okay, what are her songs?
Okay, all right.
Yeah. This is the fact that no one gets to the second Bonnie Tyler song. Everyone just
sings. I did. I knew what you were doing there. Right. Yeah, and that's a good song. It's good stuff. Okay, that's all.
No one got this GIF hint either, which I found a GIF of a tractor dancing. I thought that gave it away, and no one else. Yeah.
When other podcasts do these hints, I never know. I've never successfully guessed a podcast episode one time in my entire life. I also wanted to say about Holding Out for a Hero, like, there's a movie called Bandits. I think it's from around 2000. I remember virtually nothing about it, except for there's a scene where Cate Blanchett in her kitchen sings along to Holding Out for a Hero. And it is like the best thing that Cate Blanchett has done in her multiple Academy Award winning career.
Wow. Wow.
So I think it's on YouTube. Seek it out. Bandits.
Love it.
Robin, please defend this because I feel like I'm just going, ugh, and I don't want to be that with this, but people like this movie. Convince me I'm wrong.
So, I mean, you're probably not wrong is the thing.
Well, it's more about why do you love it? Why, what brings it, what, what about it brings you joy?
It really is. It's like the dance. It's like the joy of dance. And these kids like get the small minded community to change their ways. And then as in a more adult perspective, I really respect that this movie doesn't make John Lithgow's character like a total asshole.
Yeah.
Like he is really reasonable. They give him multiple times to push back against other elders in the community who are being more repressive. He tries to be a good dad, but he clearly just has this trauma from losing his son and has this repressive Christian like moral values hanging over him that like make it impossible to raise a teenager without angst because teenagers do anti-Christian shit. And it's like, I like that the bad guy in this movie is
Ariel?
Not a bad person. What'd you say?
Ariel?
Ariel is the bad guy.
He also backhands her for mouthing off. But
he does. Yeah. You're right. You are absolutely right. And it's also upsetting to me that her boyfriend, like, just fully beats her and
right.
just is never heard from again.
Well, and also, I was a little bit, I mean, not to say that that Ren should have taken on that fight, but he seemed really nonplussed by it. It's just like, eh, you'll survive. Like,
yeah.
What?
No, that scene added nothing. And
no,
it would have been one thing if he had, like, you know, shaken her, smacked her, and, you know, then she'd been like, and we're done here. And he'd be like, okay, well, he's the asshole boyfriend, whatever. That scene goes on forever, and he beats the shit out of her.
Right.
Yeah.
I would have liked it to have ended with her cracking up his car. Like, you know, had he hit her and then she like busts up his car and then he drives off. Like that would have been sufficient for me.
Here's my question about Reverend Shaw then. What like provokes his turnaround? You know, I mean, I acknowledge that they seed that he might not be as much of a zealot as some people, but other than he feels bad after he hits her, I don't see like a thing that happened that provoked this big arc in him.
I think it would be the fear of losing his daughter as well. Not fear of losing her to death, but I think he was feeling like they were slipping away and, you know, he's already lost his son. And now, you know, his daughter come and talk to him after the fact, like at church or something like that in the church. And I just think it was like he had a fear of like not having a relationship with her and just like, and maybe even his wife too. Like at some point his wife was just like, you know what?
The incomparable Diane Wiest.
Which, why was it like 45 minutes before she said anything?
No. Before she was famous.
God. And I just, the only thought that I had in my mind was like, God, Diane Wiest is so striking. Like there
really
was just some presence about her that's just like,
such good posture.
Yes.
And such perfectly and conservatively styled hair. She's really good in this role.
Yeah.
I agree completely with what Camila is saying. I think it's a realization that his moral hard-assery is driving away his remaining family. They also, I feel like this movie does a really good job of representing teenagers as they are, where like they're kind of assholes. They do insanely stupid things, but they are having fun, right? And this movie makes me miss being a teenager. And when I was a kid and I saw it, it made me want to be a teenager. And as a grown-up, it makes me miss being a teenager.
Oy. I don't know nothing about, like middle America.
I do.
It's just,
sorry, go ahead.
It's just all.
Say that again.
I said I don't know nothing about no like middle America, like this rural business. Like that's just like that's all very foreign to me. Like these cowboy hats and tractors and just fucking mills, people working in flour mills, and it's just.
I wrote down Ren, just lay low until college. It's not. I mean, it would be one thing. You know, if you were in like the deep suburbs, the exurbs. Of an actual city.
Right.
And it's like, you know, there's probably a few people out here who have, you know, seen a play before. This is a town where they're talking about Kurt Vonnegut books like it's Satan himself strolling through town.
He should have known.
I think that's good writing, by the way, that their like initial confrontation between him and the town elders is just like Slaughterhouse Five, great book. And then like all of their flat faces.
Crickets.
Like, he's not trying to start shit.
Right.
He is trying to be polite, but there's a culture clash there.
I do appreciate that about his characters, that he's not trying to start shit. And they also reiterate that later when old girl is like, you know, here, thanks for taking on my dad. And he's like, whoa, I ain't got no beef with your pops. That's not what I'm here for. It's like, I just want to dance, man. Which it's still just,
it's just I find it laughable. New kid experience, Sean. He doesn't need to put his head down. He immediately gets a best friend who he has status over and an invite to the cool table because the cool girls think he's cute. That is what every new kid wants.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's living a charmed life.
But I'm with you, Sean. I think he should have laid. Just, you know, don't ruffle any feathers, dude. Just this is their senior year. This was their senior year, right?
It's definitely her senior year.
Was it ever established why him and his mom moved in that town and who this family was that they moved in with?
And she didn't speak for an hour 20. That's why I was thinking of the Karate Kid. And in the Karate Kid, we know who they both are. We know what they're going. The struggle seems real. This is like, who are these people? Why are they here? What happened? How does mom feel about it?
Right.
Even when they finally sit down and talk, what do they talk? I don't remember.
I don't remember.
They talk about, because it's when the brick gets thrown through the bedroom window and endangers his cousins. That's his aunt and uncle. His father left them. He does mention this. This is all stuff that you have to be really paying attention to also kind of fill in the gaps. And you're right. It comes too late.
This, I guess, there's just something about like the rhythm of the movie or the that where I miss that stuff. And it's not like, you know, I'm not going to say I was 100% enthralled and like really paying attention. You know, I missed some stuff. Yeah. My bad. That was on me. It was not totally the movie's fault, but it was also just kind of like, you know, I just felt like some of the, it could have happened earlier. It could have happened a little bit better. Just, you know, hey, this is why we're here. And I feel like if these are his cousins that they moved in with, they knew about this dance band. And nobody wanted to say anything before? Like, that never came up in conversation at all at any point. Just, you know what, by the way, there's no dancing here. Maybe your boy might have some problems if he moves here.
One thing I do find strains credulity is that he is a city boy from Chicago and rocks up like with cowboy boots already on.
Yeah.
And just fully embraces this Southwest culture that they have there, minus the dance band. Because I felt weird when I moved to Pittsburgh.
Listen, I enjoy a small town, by which I mean you drive in, you get brunch, probably going to be great. You go to the historic thing that they have there. Every town's got one. And then you drive the fuck out. Don't integrate. Don't get a feel for the community because you're not gonna like what you find.
Don't go just turning over rocks. Just let that shit lie.
Oh, what a charming place. Look at this historic house. Then you go.
Exactly.
Oh boy.
So sorry for that, Robin.
That's okay. Listen.
I'm not going to go into the negative numbers on this because it goes a long way on the music and on a very good cast. Everyone in this is good. I found Sarah Jessica Parker charming. I've never said that about her before.
I was like, oh my God, she was cute. She used to be cute.
Yeah.
Highly recommend Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Also haven't seen it since middle school, but I bet it's perfect. Also as a teenage Helen Hunt.
John Lithgow's really good. I think he does a great job. The reason I left him out of my admittedly condescending 60-second recap is, for all the focus on him, he does not affect the course of the movie. Like,
yeah,
you're right.
The actual, there are two conflicts. It's whether or not they'll have the dance, which they get around by just having it over the town line. His journey with that is not of consequence. And, you know, the subplot about getting beaten up by the old boyfriend. Like, we spend all this time with him and that doesn't have anything to do with it. But the performance is great. One of my favorite scenes in the movie is where he's giving the same speech about why he likes small towns at all of these different occasions.
Yes, that is awesome. Good directing.
That's great. I love the whole sequence when they do go to the nightclub. Everything about that is good. It's just, they don't have a whole story here.
Right.
Like, you get 30 minutes in and we're all ready to, how long can we make this tractor chicken fight? Because we need to eat up some time.
Also, I've got a question about the rules of tractor chicken. Are you meant to steer the tractor and that's how you lose? Or are you really supposed to be like, we're going to crash these two tractors and it's whoever dives out of their tractor first?
It was my understanding that all chicken is a matter of who flinches first.
Like, right, whoever's, I thought flinching meant
whoever steers
out
or
of the path.
Or jumps off or, but it would either way. Their reaction of surprise when they're like, whoa, what are you crazy? Like, what'd you do? Trying to kill me? That's the point of your fucking game. Like, what are you doing? What did you think was going to happen?
Tractor chicken is not a good game.
No.
No, my understanding of normal chicken is, yes, you're turning the wheel. But not only did ex-boyfriend dive out of the tractor, Kevin Bacon was trying to.
Exactly.
He wasn't trying to turn the wheel. He was trying to get up and jump.
Yeah.
So, right. Yeah, I guess tractor chicken assumes a collision. It's just
whose
where you will be.
Whose tractors are those?
Old dude's dad, I think. Dude's dad, because it was his dad's farm, right? When Lori's like, so-and-so wants to meet you on his daddy's property. At that point, I'm like, so-and-so can kiss my ass. Like, what is this? What are you doing?
Is this missing from society? You know, in the 1800s, you would have a duel. And if you wanted to make your point without anyone dying, you know, you fired in the air. We've all seen Hamilton. We understand. And, you know, then 70 years later, you would play chicken. What does our generation, what violent act that can be that can result in status without death does our generation have?
Twitter.
Canceling someone on Twitter.
Yeah, it's a Twitter war. It's
what, a subtweet? I don't know if I'm using that correctly.
See, I feel like if I could really hate somebody, and if I played a game of chicken with them, regardless of the outcome, I would shake their hand and move on with my life. I don't feel that way about Twitter.
Yeah, we just don't have anything unless, you know, we bring back bare knuckle boxing. Let's
bringing it back to Fight Club.
I'm still feeling the fight. I'm still feeling the Tyler Durden on me.
Yeah.
Well, anything else? I remember early on thinking, you know what you want to avoid is a town where the preacher is both white and sweaty. If it's a white, sweaty preacher.
Every human in that town is white and sweaty. They have no other kind of person.
And, you know, as we mentioned this, is it a coincidence that this town has banned dancing and there's not one person of color anywhere around? Was the ban on dancing really about the safety of their children?
Dancing ban for about 7 years. That just didn't come up.
I'm honestly surprised that when they remade it, they didn't make the incoming dancing teenager a person of color.
Yeah, that would have just been too on the nose.
From what I can tell, the remake, which neither I nor anyone else has ever seen, it was actually more countrified. Like, I think Blake Shelton does Footloose in the new version, and it's like a country movie.
Ew.
And don't like that.
No. Ew. No, thank you. I will never, ever, ever see that.
No. Yeah, I'm being too harsh. It is not a bad time. It is just kind of dumb and way too long. This has a Xanadu level of, okay, wrap it up. We're at the dance. It's fine. You did it.
Congratulations.
So rate it, I guess. I started at a 51 and I gave one extra point for when John Lithgow turns the radio off and it makes the Pac-Man dying sound in the background. That was 3 points. So
I thought
50,
I imagined
52.
That. I give it a 67. Mostly, most of those points are for John Lithgow, Diane Weiss. For whatever weird, I don't want to say, maybe appreciation I have for Kevin Bacon. I don't know exactly what it is or where it comes from. But there's something about
a compelling actor.
Yeah, like, you know, and also for the song. I mean, the Footloose song, just being, and also Denise Williams. Let's hear it for the boy.
Yeah,
Robin.
You guys talked me down a solid point.
Okay. Well, it's not too far.
Not so far. I do want to quickly acknowledge before I give my final score that I gave at least 5 points for the scene or the montage of Kevin Bacon teaching Chris Penn how to dance by tethering him and rhythmically squatting. Anyway, precious, amazing. I'm going to go 76.
Okay.
See, I felt two ways about the learning to dance montage because it was adorable. It was also 90 minutes into the movie. I'm like, it is right. Too late to be starting your training montage.
There were just too many music videos in the movie. Like, had that been the only thing. But no, we have to listen to the entire song played over nonsense. And like that was a compelling montage, but like when they get to the dance and we have to do a whole montage of or just like the full 5 minutes of Wallflowers, like come on now, we didn't need this.
Well, 65 is the final score. That's fine. That's you know, good. That's 2/3 of the way up. You know, we're not. I just know there's a lot of people who this is, you know, an important part of their lives. And,
I'm here for you, people.
Yeah. To the bingo card as soon as I find it.
I don't think we have anything.
To the bingo
character
card.
Puts on shoes.
Oh, yay.
They're Sunday shoes, in fact.
Yes.
We're kicked off and put on.
Yeah, she puts on those red cowboy boots.
That's right.
Times.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
Yes.
But I am now one away from bingo in two directions.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for someone to fall in high heels. And surprisingly, Camila joked last week, is Tu Wong Fu on the list? It is. What?
Nice.
That does surprise me.
Yeah, we could take care of this in a hurry. So it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. What you watching?
I don't think I watched any newer movies. I just got myself caught up on Handmaid's Tale. And by God, that was a beautiful series or season finale. I can't get into any more, but totally worth it if you're into it. If you watch Handmaid's Tale,
that show's too sad for me.
There's a lot of vindication in that last in this last episode I just watched.
Vindication.
Oh, I did. I watched. Okay, I watched Awake on Netflix.
Colin watched that
too. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not terrible, but it's also I would never tell. It was so long ago. I can't even really specify why I didn't enjoy it or why it was just kind of like a lull. Maybe because that's like one of the more terrifying things about just like natural aspects of life happening is like not being able to sleep, like that over being just overly tired, like that shit is mm-hmm. fucked up. I don't like it at all.
I can't imagine how much more traumatizing that premise is for someone who has cared for a newborn child.
Dude, that shit's real. Like that's what I'm yeah. saying. Like when somebody told, like my sister had told me about the movie, and she's like, Awake, and it's like blah blah blah. I was like, or Parenthood, like what the fuck?
Yeah.
Just like going through life just all yeah it's not it's fine if you just want to get some like weird sci-fi horror-esque type thing fix on a Saturday afternoon, but I wouldn't count on it to like really super entertain you or anything. Like I don't know, that's all I recall.
Yep.
It's on Netflix.
I didn't really watch anything new. I watched the first 20 minutes, half hour of In the Heights. I will finish it. Sean, I'm sorry. It's not for me.
Oh, really?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, apparently it's not for anybody.
There is something about musicals that I am... this is my cynicism, is that I'm always like, okay. And like, it's sometimes the magic works. You know, like I loved the filmed version of Hamilton that was on Disney Plus. And I remember when Hamilton first became a phenomenon, I remember Liz Labaz, my best friend, was like, you'll like this musical. It's not really musical music. It's like hip hop. Mm. And the very like 2 seconds into the soundtrack, I was like, she is wrong. This is musical music and barely hip hop. But after watching it in the context of the show, I was like, no, I totally get it. The Hamilton soundtrack's great. honestly, a lot of the problem I was having within The Heights is that I'm like, this is first draft Hamilton. Like, this is the same music with different words about it.
Wow. I have that same.
Sorry,
I have that same
Sean's
thing.
Face is falling.
I have that same thing where musicals are. Is like either there's a direct line, and I can't always like pinpoint why or what it is, but it's like there's a line. It's like either I love it or I hate it. That's where
that's
musicals
exactly
are for
what
me.
Like. Right. Like as you'll recall, I'm totally on board for Fiddler on the Roof.
Right.
Who can say why?
Like I don't know something about the mechanics of whatever the music is happening that does the vibrations in my ears or whatever. Like something, it's something scientific. I don't have any control over it.
Yes. The other thing that I wanted to say about In the Heights is that this is one of the first movies that I have seen where the characters are all grown-ups but seem markedly younger than me.
Interesting.
I was like, I'm old.
No, it's not. You're allowed to not like it. I'm so heartbroken at how few people are seeing it. I mean, I know that the box office isn't back yet, but I try not to be, you know, people have no taste anymore. But I'm concerned right now because it's this next year or so that's going to determine what happens to movie theaters. I don't think movie theaters are going away, but like what movies go to movie theaters and what movies go to streaming and what the ways in which people engage with movie theaters post-COVID is going to be determined by what people go to see. And I'm just watching, relatively speaking, people go out in droves to see Conjuring 3 and mediocre-ass Quiet Place Part 2 and like all of this stuff that is hitting so much bigger than In the Heights. And The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard is a number one movie in America.
Oh, God.
And it's like, oh, so people with taste are staying home. Great. Got it. Thank you. I don't know. I'm not surprised that In the Heights is not for everybody. And musically, I agree with you. It sounds like Hamilton without the songs being as memorable as they were. I was more impressed with the cast, the direction, you know, than I was like, I wasn't going to go listen to the soundtrack afterwards.
The direction seemed, it was like, I could tell why you liked it. I could tell why people who like it like it, but it was not hitting for me to the point that I turned it off.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I will finish it eventually. Probably this little thing that HBO Max does where there's like the 30-day window, that is actually working on me. That's why I watched the Angelina Jolie firefighter movie.
Sure.
They figured it out.
Congratulations to In the Heights on being the movie that at the end of the year, I'm like, this is my number one. And I know no one else agrees, but it's my number one. It's staying there.
Yeah. So there.
Taking the 40-year-old version slot for 2021. Yeah, what did I watch? Can I count Bo Burnham Inside as a movie? Have either of you watched it?
I have not.
I watched the one song about white women's Instagram, and I'm so tired of white male comedians putting the word white in front of the word women to be misogynist. I'm just done with it. I'm fucking done with it. Sorry.
Fuck that dude.
I liked it a lot.
I'm sure it's a brilliant piece of artistry. And I am fully judging it on the basis of a YouTube clip. But you know what? That's where Buddy started. So
right.
That's true. That's true. And that's interesting because the only place I won't go is a lot of people are like, this is one of the best, you know, people I really like are like, this is one of my favorite things ever. I won't go that far because it brings up those questions without answering them, still in an interesting way. A big part of it is about how, you know, he has a song that's apologizing for how shitty he used to be on YouTube. And there's a lot of commentary in there about how recursive that gets. Like, there's another bit where he's like, here's this. Here's me explaining this away. Here's how me explaining this away is a defense mechanism that's meant to get you to forgive me for it. Here's how acknowledging that I need you to forgive me for it, in turn, is not explaining it away anymore. It's playing with all of that. It doesn't answer it. And with the white women's Instagram song, I was like, as much as this is funny and often accurate, it does feel weird in here because That's one of the only little dips in the thing where it's like, here's just a comedy song instead of this weird personal like reflection on being our age during the pandemic. That said, I liked it a lot because it is so uncategorizable. Mm-hmm. It is, I at one point I called it awful fun. It is like sad, depressing, fun stuff. For most of it, I was just kind of watching it going, oh, this is interesting. This is creative. And then at the end, I felt terrible because it is such an effective like display of where our mental health was at over the past year. And it's kind of comedy, kind of drama, kind of not. It's kind of a stand-up special, kind of a movie, kind of nothing. It's a really interesting thing to exist in the world while not without its problems.
Yeah, you just solidified it. I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
that's doing way too much. Bo Burnham.
Everyone likes foam art, not just white women. It's a coffee, but it has a leaf on top of it.
I watched the 1971 movie Walkabout, which is brilliant. That's by the same guy that did Don't Look Now. This is going to become Nicholas Rogue is his name. This is my new film nerd type thing. He also did The Man Who Fell to Earth, which is the next thing of his that I will watch. And there was a sci-fi weekend up at Riverside. I'm watching Revenge of the Creature, this being the creature from the Black Lagoon. And in one scene, there's a random lab assistant doing a little bit of business with a missing rat. That lab assistant is played by Clint Eastwood in his film debut. Not even credited. You remember how before a certain time, like only the top 15 people actually got their name on the movie? His name isn't in there. And I'm like, this man is still making movies today, and I'm watching him here in A Creature from the Black Lagoon. How old is he? So to answer your question, Scott Eastwood looks like Clint Eastwood, but, you know, kind of through a filter, through
blurred out a little bit.
Opaque filter.
Yes.
Speaking of problematic people. Anyway, oh, and Hitman's Wife Bodyguard. No, why does this exist? Let's not bother.
My friend Chad messaged me, like, skip Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard. It's bad. Antonio Banderas plays a Greek. I don't even remember the end of that sentence, but I was like, I'm sorry, you have further sold me on my need to see this movie. You have completely failed in warning me away.
Antonio Banderas says, what?
Like, right, exactly.
Like, I didn't know he was in that.
No. I also weirdly liked the first one. Like, that was one of those movies where I'm like, this is not good, but I am having a great time.
Yeah, I didn't mind it, but you know what? I'm definitely not going to pay for it, like, whenever it's, you know, free.
100%. Oh. Yes, this will be a home box night for me.
The best part of the movie is that Antonio Banderas' character is very Greek. His whole arc is about loving Greece. And they evidently sat down and said, what's the most Greek name we can possibly come up with, and succeeded, landing on Aristotle Papadopoulos. Like, yes, that is
all right.
Enough the random draw. Cut
Did
this
you see
out.
That Herbert Ross was married to Jackie Kennedy Onassis. Speaking of Greek Aristotle's little sister.
No.
No.
Yes.
That's fascinating.
Briefly. He had a long marriage with a woman who died of cancer, and a year later married Jackie O's little sister. And in her memoir or something, she was like, I didn't know he was still obsessed with his dead wife. So the marriage did not last very long.
That sounds like a pretty harsh fucking thing to say.
I mean, you know.
Like, you know what? God forbid, if I go first, I hope that, you know, Dan's next wife will have those same words of, like, she will be upset that he was still obsessed with me. So
I want that for you too.
I'll want Mary Beth to move on, but yeah, I want her to still keep a picture of me.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's like, is that too much to ask? A shrine? Come on. Like, that's,
I mean, I don't have to say if I go first, because look at me and look at Mary Beth. I'm going first. She's gonna live to be 108. She watched the movie with me, and her big line was, you know, when John Lithgow was ranting about how tempting music is, she said, and they haven't even heard To the Window to the Wall yet.
She's right. Oh,
oh, let's draw a movie. Well, from Fight Club to Footloose to, oh my God, it was one away from Tu Wong Fu. It was literally one number away from going straight to Tu Wong Fu. Instead, it landed on this year's Tom and Jerry.
Nope.
So.
Nope. Nope. Not going to do it.
I just have a veto.
I'm not doing it. It's a veto. Veto.
Exercise my veto, man.
Thank you, Camila.
I was almost curious about this before it came out, and then it, you know.
I watched it.
You watched it?
I watched it. It's not as bad as you think it might be. It's still definitely worthy of a veto.
Okay. Yeah, I just don't. I don't have the bandwidth for it.
Well, I hope you have the bandwidth for the film With Honors.
Ooh, yes. It's Brendan Fraser.
Oh my gosh, this was a formative movie for me.
Yes.
I have no idea what it is. What is it?
Is this one with Joe Pesci too, right?
Yeah.
And Winona Ryder?
I think it might be Moira Kelly.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Discount Winona Ryder.
Right.
Poor her. She's the one who got, she's in Firewalk with me because Laura Flynn Boyle wouldn't come back too. She's just discounting many people.
And you know about Mandy, right? She's in the first season of The West Wing, which ends on a cliffhanger and begins minutes later. And she's just gone and never spoken of again.
Wow.
I know nothing about the movie. What is, someone tell me what this movie is.
It's like Joe Pesci is like a
vagabond,
houseless person who, and then they're at Harvard?
Yale? No, Harvard. You're right.
I think it's Harvard. And yeah, like his street wisdom helps them handle Harvard, I think.
It's like a comedy drama type thing. Oh yeah, Patrick Dempsey is also in it.
Hey, cool. That sounds a lot more interesting than Tom and Jerry.
Totes. Yeah. And I get to talk about Brendan Fraser.
Did you see him on Twitter? He looks like Santa Claus now.
I don't want to talk about it.
We'll talk about it next time. He's gone through it.
He's been through some stuff.
Yeah. He looks happy.
Finally, yes. He's been on a journey. Boy.
We'll talk about it next time.
Yeah.
And we'll get into it next time. Horny for him also.
Yes.
Quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. Totes. Oh, yeah. I got a lot to say about that.
Hey.
Some poor guy that I worked with that had the misfortune of kind of looking like him. Whew. Boy.
And he was like, why is Camila always looking at me?
I truly appreciate this because it is a vote of confidence in men with unusually large heads like myself. I appreciate it. Footloose was released on February 17th, 1984. What was the number one song in America? No, it was not something from the movie. That would happen about 2 months later. Footloose would go to number one.
Jump?
No.
Prince?
No.
Bon Jovi?
Prince was all over the charts this year. This is a much more... Well, the artist is still alive and well, and I'm sure producing art, this is much more of an of-the-era kind of choice. This is certainly a big hit, but not one you're going to hear too often these days.
Steve Perry?
No, it's a very gentle song. This is very, very relaxed vibes, but an upbeat song, just very kind of mellow. And
Billy Ocean?
Ooh, that's a good guess. That is
a good guess. No, but Billy Ocean would be described as intense compared to...
What? Who the fuck is this? Intense?
Billy Ocean compared as intense? That is a wild clue.
Right? That's not Lionel Richie.
I was going to say, is it Lionel Richie?
No. Let's just call it as it is and say we're looking for a gay icon.
Culture Club?
A really gay icon. Culture Club it is.
Chameleon?
With Karma Chameleon.
There we go.
Listen, it's a bop. It's an upbeat song. Yeah. And yet it feels like a silky bedsheet. It's just very...
Yeah, until like everybody is singing it to you in, you know, fourth, fifth grade. Karma Chameleon.
Oh, no. That's not even the right way to do it, right? Right. You want to go, comma, 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 Camila.
Right. Yeah, you know, but you know, kids are lazy, but also creative.
I'm sorry for you. I had kids sing Rockin' Robin to me, and that's an undeniably awesome song, and it annoyed me.
Jeez. And I also got Aruba, Jamaica, Ooh, I Want to Take You to.
Kokomo.
Yeah, the Kokomo. Somewhere yeah. They worked my name in there somewhere, too.
So they're not lazy. That took some doing.